B2N Business Podcast. We are here today with Robin Hartfield, a man that is a true industry insider, as well as an all-around good guy and bon vivant. Welcome to the show, Robin. I'm doing great. And I thought we'd talk about what the future holds. Now, we're in a financial crisis, but that's not what we're going to talk about. You have had a heck of a fourth quarter and have been to Milan, the largest motorcycle show in the world. And I thought you could give us some insights of what you saw and what we might be seeing in the near term or in the long term from what you saw in Milan.
Well, short term, I think we're going to see some pretty amazing technology. Milan show always brings out the best and the brightest on the design front. It's by far and away the granddaddy of all of the motorcycle industry shows worldwide. It's used to be held in alternating years with the big show in Cologne, Germany, but now the show management at Milan decided to make a big emphasis on doing the show annually. And it was, at least from a consumer standpoint, a huge success. They had record attendance over the 10-day run of the show. And while things are slowing down here in the American market, the European market, especially the Northern European market, is looking pretty healthy, which was a nice change of pace after seeing things slow down here closer to home.
You know, last year when we talked about the show, you'd mentioned that when the racer Rossi walked into the show, the crowds parted like the sea, and he was upheld as a god. Is Rossi still big in Milan?
He is probably more popular than anybody but the Pope at this point. Every third booth, from the Bridgestone booth to the Yamaha booth to every sponsor he's got, had the genuine Rossi race bike on display. So I don't know how many bikes he had during the course of the season, but I saw 50 identical Rossi replicas on display at the show.
So do you think that Yamaha's doing pretty good at selling those bikes?
Yeah, I would think so, and maybe even going to do better this coming year with the new R1 being based on their World Superbike, and there's already a Rossi replica color scheme, even though Rossi's racing MotoGP. But the bike sounds almost as good as his GP bike does and looks just like his GP bike does. So this is a real case of the racetrack-driven technology translating to what the customer's going to get on the showroom floor.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Yamaha. Was there some new product there that caught your attention?
There's always great product there that unfortunately we won't see here in America. They've got a 125 two-stroke, basically a glorified mini bike that looks, again, just like Rossi's bike. You can even get the number 46 on it, and it's painted up in his color scheme. And if I was a kid in Italy, that would be the bike that I had to have. I'm not a kid in Italy, and I'm still trying to figure out a way that I can get one imported over here just to play around with. They've got...
Well, when you find out, I'm sure you can start your own business.
All I got to do is bring over two and then create a spec class for it, and I can race any of my buddies, and that'll be fine.
Yeah. What else did you see at the booth?
They've got their big enduro bikes that we don't get over here. Looks just like the Dakar race bikes, even though there's no Dakar. Well, there's Dakar, but that's moved to Chile. That's a whole different can of worms. But when it comes to just a big thumper, do-everything enduro bike, that would be my second choice. And again, that's something that we can't get here in the U.S. product portfolio.
Now, in some of the magazines here stateside, we're starting to see a lot about electric motorcycles. Was that a big thing out there?
A couple years ago when Vectrex, which is one of the leaders in the electric vehicle market, came out, they did their big launch in Milan rather than the U.S., even though they were based in Connecticut at the time. And Vectrex had a demo ride area, and they brought that back again this year. They're definitely aware of it. the Euro 3 standards and emissions and technology have been advancing steadily, but it's not necessarily translating to what sells and what the guys are riding on the street. And they're used to paying $5 a liter for gas, and their core audience of motorcycle people continue to ride, pay a premium for the privilege to ride, and would rather ride a conventional motorcycle than embrace the new electric technology at this point.
So a little resistance there.
I don't know if it's resistance or if it's just they're still so happy with what they get. Again, like the little two-stroke 125 street bike that's legal over there. Why, if you had an electric scooter or the choice of that bike at the Yamaha booth, I think that they're more comfortable going with the existing technology. And the same thing, Kajiva still has the Mito 125. There's a whole separate class of great 125 two-strokes that are perfectly street legal, even to the tougher Euro 3 standard, emissions-wise, that we don't see over here. And I think that until those are mandated out of existence, the electric scooters are going to have a hard time making inroads into that portion of the market.
Well, you're speaking about sport bikes, so let's turn our attention over to MV Agusta. It is now part of the Harley market. And did you see anything interesting over there, or any of the handprints of Harley?
Well, we saw the bikes themselves on display at the show, and then one day after the show, we made a trip up to Lake District, where the old Aramaki plant is, which is currently the MV Agusta plant, and we saw that there are a grand total of two Harley-Davidson people, the head guy and one of the engineering guys. The rest of it is the existing crew that was in place manufacturing MV Agustas before the buyout. And this was, at the time, I think 90 days into Harley's ownership of MV. So there were some nice banners and great display materials with the MV and the Harley logos on them. But other than that, it's pretty much true to form. It's still the original MV Agusta factory, and it's the MV product coming off the assembly line.
So it doesn't sound like Harley's done much but open up their pocketbook.
At this point, that's exactly what's happened. I think that Harley's going to benefit in the longer term from getting a network of about 300-350 MV dealers in Europe that hopefully they can sell the Harley product line through. But quite frankly, I didn't see a lot of the master plan moving forward, both for Harley's sake or MV's. Right now, MV is one of those sacred brands that I think part of the charm is the fact that it is Italian-made, and they want to keep it that way, and then hopefully just build on their existing technology and innovation with Harley's finances to back it.
I see.
I don't think that there's been any announcement made to the U.S. dealers as to what the plan would be for them to start carrying an MV lineup over here.
Mm-hmm. Well, getting back to the show, any new technology you saw that caught your attention?
Not so much the new stuff as the upgrades. The guys at NCR, which is a specialty company for Ducati, built a Halewood replica that was absolutely phenomenal. Looked like the bike's original bike. And for only $130,000 U.S., you can have one, or a bargain price, 100,000 euro. So if I win the lottery, that's where my money's going to go.
So what made that look so special in your eyes?
It was what Halewood would be riding if he was still alive and racing today. All of the classic look of the old bike with all of the latest technology from Ducati's World Superbike. So basically, you take Casey Stoner's MotoGP winning bike and you put the Hellwood fairing and color scheme on it, and that's the synthesis that NCR came up with.
Wow, that does sound like an exciting bike.
That was the highlight of the show for me personally, and I think about 100,000 other Italians as well, because that booth, even more so than the Rossi replicas on every corner, seemed to stop people in their tracks.
Robin, talk to us about the American Pavilion and what you found of interest.
As always, the American Pavilion was the heart of the action for those of us from North America. It's adjacent to Harley-Davidson's giant display, Confederate motorcycles, ATK, and a couple of other recognizable U.S. brands weren't in the pavilion, but were right on the periphery, so we had this little American enclave. And then within the American Pavilion itself, we had companies like GPR Steering Stabilizers, National Power Sports Auctions, and people looking to make an impression on the European market. And certainly the guys at NPA made a huge impression when they brought in Roland Sands to give one of his super single race bikes to Italy's greatest racer of all time, Giacomo Agostini. So that was definitely the highlight of the show.
You know, that's so interesting that that bike in and of itself is a one-off. It's a 450 off-road bike that's been modified for road racing in a spec series that as of yet hasn't gone off the ground. I'm really surprised that that made such a big splash.
Well, I think anywhere Ago goes, he's going to draw a crowd. I think that the girls manning the MPA booth certainly helped stop traffic as well, and the bike itself was definitely eye-catching. Instead of something done up in Agostini's old race livery, Roland went with the All-American theme, and it was done in the stars and bars with the 01, like the General Lee from the Dukes of Hazzard.
And is Dukes of Hazzard a known entity in Europe?
Well, it definitely was American, not European. I don't know if they all got the reference,
uh-huh.
But there was, with Confederate motorcycles right next to it and the Confederate flag flying in both the NPA booth and Confederate's booth, some of us got the reference.
And were there a few Daisy Dukes out there?
The girls working in the American Pavilion certainly were wearing their Daisy Dukes, and that seemed to get the attention of the TV cameras. Although Ago was there and it made the national news,
uh-huh.
I think some of those cameras lingered more on the models than they did on the actual presentation between Roland, Justin Amstutz from MPA, and Giacomo Agostini.
So, if you know the backstory, is it difficult to get the national treasure of Italy a free motorcycle? Is that hard to do, or is that like... fairly simple to do?
It's incredibly difficult and also incredibly easy, depending on how you look at it. The typical modus operandi for behind the scenes at any trade show is prepare for the worst, and then it's going to be even worse than you prepared for. So there was a comedy of errors nonstop of getting the bike shipped, getting the bike through customs. Justin had to physically get a forklift, unload the bike, and wheel it in less than 10 minutes before the TV cameras were there for the presentation. There was getting Roland to come over and overcome his jet lag and be ready to make the presentation. There, behind the scenes logistically, absolute nightmare, complete chaos, and came off perfectly like it usually does. Once the cameras start rolling, nobody knows that backstory.
Right, right.
Getting a hold of Ago, same thing. A friend of a friend who works at AGV, who was Ago's primary helmet sponsor during his racing career, put in the word that the bike was coming and they wanted to present it to him. And again, up until he actually showed up, there was no confirmation. Nobody knew if he was going to do it. But, of course, where the TV cameras were, Ago's there. He looks like a movie star. Everybody was all smiles for the presentation. Came off just like it planned.
Like they'd practiced it
yep.
Four or five times before. How interesting.
And then after seeing all of that firsthand, 20 minutes later, the newly elected Italian president, Silvio Berlusconi, came through. And so all of the TV cameras that weren't already on Ago immediately followed the Berlusconi party through from the American Pavilion over to the MV Augusta Pavilion, which MV, now being owned by Harley-Davidson, was sort of U.S. territory as well now, too.
Well, could you talk about the size and range of the crowds at this show? It's I don't know if people really understand what the world's largest motorcycle show really is.
It's always easy to bandy about terms like world's largest, but to put it in perspective, the show halls are giant freestanding hangars, and there's no support pillars or anything. So exhibit space in each hall is, 50,000 square meters. The show itself encompasses 265,000 square meters, which that's mind-boggling. And there's of those halls, there's 8 halls filled with exhibits. There's an outdoor exhibit area where there's a full demo ride course, a full supercross course, a drag racing area, a trials display area, all of these things. It's huge. And then, let's see, the trade-only days start early in the week, but Friday night, when they open the doors to the public for the first time, it is just a complete madhouse. They estimate there's 100,000 people that come streaming through the doors just on Friday night alone.
Wow, that's really an amazing thing. And they come from all over Europe, obviously, and all over the world.
Yeah, even though it's the show in Milan, it's got a great international reputation. This was the 68th show, but because of the war years and things like that where it wasn't running consecutively, the show itself has actually been running, I think, 85 years. And in all those 85 years, it has been the international exhibition for both the aftermarket and the OEMs to present their new products to all of Europe.
And do you think that the Americans made any headway in getting products into the European market this year?
Well, we are seeing little by little. Parts Unlimited announced that they were going to do Parts Europe, and they're trying to take the American two-step distribution model and make that work for the European Union. And Tuckeraki is also got Tucker Europe now that they're in the process of making work. Custom Chrome has always had Custom Chrome Europe, and that's fairly successful for the V-twin market. And you see all sorts of American companies exhibiting, not necessarily as part of the American Pavilion, but companies like National Cycle have their own display and trying to create their own presence. And then there's other companies like FMF, which is there to support their European distributors. So they've got a strong presence, even though they don't necessarily have a single booth they're working out of.
So what was the feeling at the end of the show? Was it positive, negative, the same from last year?
Definitely on a positive note, last year there was a transportation strike that Friday, so it really hurt attendance and started the show off on a bad vibe, whereas this year they waited until Monday after the show closed before there was another transportation strike. So everybody who wanted to see the show did get a chance to see the show. The gas prices, recession, all of the other issues that we were facing in the United States, they seemed to, they hadn't been hit as hard by the recession, and they're used to paying $5 a liter for gas. So those weren't issues to them. They were there to see new product and get excited about the motorcycle industry and the pure passion, especially the Italian crowd that they have for racing and for motorcycling is really awesome. And it's something that we really can't experience in the United States. You go to any of the Cycle World motorcycle shows, and that's quite a spectacle and very impressive to see. Take that, the biggest bike world show at the, like the Jacob Javits Center in New York, and multiply that by 100, and then that's what you have in Italy.
That would be something special to see here domestically. Well, you had mentioned that you'd went to the MV Agusta manufacturing plant. And I think that we'll end the show by you telling us a little bit of the highlights of that tour and what you thought of not only the plant, the legacy, but also what you might have seen as far as product and what we might be seeing here domestically.
Well, I don't know what we will be seeing because I don't think that Harley's thought it through quite that far yet. They made the purchase, and we did get a chance to go up to Varese to see the factory, which is the original Air Machi seaplane factory, which was later producing the Harley Sprints, and Harley had a vested interest in it back in the day. They've since purchased what they'd already once owned. It's now the MV Agusta plant instead of an Air Machi seaplane plant. The assembly line is state-of-the-art. The technology for their assembly comes straight from Porsche rather than from Harley-Davidson.
Hmm.
So the bikes start as a frame in its own little special cart with wheels and all of the key components mounted onto this cart, and then the cart goes through. So each bike is individually assembled one at a time, piece by piece, by hand, rather than some of the automation or the different components where Harley-Davidson in the United States will make Sportsters in Kansas City, make the engines in the Tomahawk factory, do the paint work at the York factory, and sort of assemble those components in a conventional manner. This was still that old-world craftsmanship, hands-on sort of mystique that you'd expect out of MV Agusta.
So what was your feeling when you saw that? Is it a feeling of you could feel the pride that these people had, or did it make you feel like that they had something here, or that they were so far behind technologically wise?
Definitely the pride comes through. I'd been to the MV factory in years past, and for them, the workers on the line and everything, it's still the same MV. Harley-Davidson might be paying for some of the bills and covering the raw material costs and things like that, but the design work and the craftsmanship and the assembly is still 100% pure Italian. And in fact, there's only two Americans from Harley-Davidson there at the plant at the point where we were, and this is 90 days into Harley taking over the operation. So other than these two guys calling the shots and some nice promotional material that had the MV and Harley-Davidson logos on it in the media presentation, there really isn't much of a Harley stamp at all on the MV factory.
Well, that's exciting times for Harley, that's for sure.
Again, we don't know what the product mix will be. It could be that Harley's dealerships in the United States now get access to the MV. It may be that Harley just keeps it separate, and they're using that as a springboard to the 300 to 350 dealerships that MV's got throughout Northern Europe. And we asked, a couple of the journalists asked the question point blank, so what does this mean? And the answer is it's a work in progress. Nobody knows exactly what it means, or they may know, they're just not willing to tell the media guys yet.
All right, well, there you have it. The recap of the Milan show with Robin Hartfield. Robin, before you go, I understand that you'll be heading out to another show pretty soon.
I hope so. The same people who do the EICMA show, EICMA's Exposizione Internazionale Ciclo e Motociclo in Milan, have a big show that they launched last year in Singapore, where they're using the same successful model that they have used in Italy all these years, trying to translate that into the new emerging markets in Singapore. So last year's launch was pretty impressive for a first-time event, and I'm hoping that this year will be even better.
Well, have fun at the Singapore show, and we'll look forward to talking to you next month.
Sounds good.
Thanks a lot. V-Twin Business Podcast is sponsored in part by Biker Pros, a team of consultants providing strategic planning, public relations, brand development, and marketing consulting services, each utilizing proven processes that have been refined and validated over dozens of client engagements. Find Biker Pros online at www.bikerpros.com.